One of the greatest kings that the Jewish nation ever had was Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He was a very, very righteous king, and he brought the Klal Yisrael to a level of proper avoda and tshuva that was remarkable. But despite the fact that he was an extremely pious individual, and despite the fact that he was a tremendous Yirei Hashem, he was 39 years old and still not married. And the reason he didn't marry was because he saw Baruch HaKodesh, he saw prophetically, that his children would be Rishayim. He saw prophetically that Menashe, one of the ultimate Rishayim, one of the most wicked individuals who ever walked the face of the earth, was to be his child, and therefore he made a conscious decision not to marry. At a certain point, he gets sick. So sickly that he's taken to his deathbed, and it's very clear that his end is near. Hashem sends Yeshayahu HaNovi to visit Chizkiyahu, and Yeshayahu HaNovi walks in and says, prepare yourself. Say your final goodbyes, command your household, because you will die. But not only will you will die and you have no portion in the world to come, you have no chelik in Olam Haba. At which point Chizkiyahu turns to Yeshayahu HaNovi and says, my hai, what's pshat, what is this all about? And Yeshayahu answers, Mishum shalasakta b'pir rivya, because you were not involved in the midst of having children. At which point Chizkiyahu answers, that's correct, but it wasn't flippant, it wasn't without cause, it was for a very specific reason. I saw Baruch HaKodesh, I saw prophetically that I would have children who are not appropriate or not proper, and therefore I didn't do it. At which point Yeshayahu said the words, Bahadi kapshid rahman alamalach. These secrets of Hashem are none of your concern. You are to do your job. You have a mitzvah. You are to do your issues. The Gemara continues that at that point, Chizkiyahu recognized that he would die if he didn't do tshuva. So he turns to Yeshayahu and says as follows. You have a daughter. Maybe between your merit and my merit, it's possible to have a child who's not a Rasha. I want you to give me your daughter as a wife. And in fact, that was the agreement. 3 days later, Chizkiyahu was well. He married Yeshayahu's daughter, and they had children. However, the children that they had were not particularly righteous. One of those children were, in fact, Menashe. The Bach and the Gemara tells us that one day, Chizkiyahu is walking in the palace, holding his two little children. And he hears a conversation between one to the other. And one of the little tzatzkala says to his brother, look at daddy's bald spot. Wouldn't that be a great place to roast fish? His little brother, the tzaddikel, says, nah, it's a much better place to sacrifice to an avodah zarah. Let's burn this particular sacrifice to this particular idol. At which point, Chizkiyahu hears this conversation. He throws both boys on the floor, recognizing the fact that that which he saw prophetically had come true. And he lived with that to the end of his days. Not long thereafter, he dies. When Menashe is 12 years old, he takes the throne. The Novi describes that Menashe was a Rasha. He did Ra Be'ini Hashem, every imaginable abomination he introduced into the Klal Yisrael. He made Avodah Zarah, idol worship, rampant. He closed off the roads to the Beis HaMikdash. You couldn't be Olah Regel. He put various abominations in the Beis HaMikdash. He began doing everything in his power to turn the Jewish nation away from Hashem. And he was very successful. For 55 years he reigned. Never had there been as evil a king. Never had there been a king who turned the Bnei Israel away from Hashem. At the end of his career, he would walk around killing people with his hands. He filled the streets with blood. He was, as a marsha says, like vinegar. He went from bad to worse. And that was how he lived out his reign. Now, with that being said, here's the final question I'd like to introduce to this Gemara. Let's go back to that conversation that Yeshayah had with Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Yeshayah says these words, it's not for no reason that I'm not having children, it's because I saw Baruch HaKodesh. I saw prophetically that my children will be Rishayim. To which Yeshayah says, if you don't do tshuva, if you don't change your ways, you will die and you will have no Olam Haba, no share in the world to come. Here's the question. Isn't it obvious that Chizkiyahu was right and Yeshayah was wrong? Meaning to say, if you look at the mitzvah of Piriviyah and you open the Sefer Chinuch, and Sefer Chinuch explains exactly why there's a mitzvah. The mitzvah is to take a neshama and give that neshama the opportunity to be a part of this world. If the neshama succeeds and the neshama elevates itself, it reaches tremendous heights. But here's the point. It was bad for Menashe to have been born. He would have been far better off not being born. His generation would have been far better off had he not been born. Isn't it clear that Chizkiyahu was right? He should not have had these children. It was bad for his child, bad for the generation. It was not a mistake that he was making. Shlomo Melech thought he was wiser than the Torah, but he was wrong. Chizkiyahu was right. And if he was right, isn't it obvious that the correct path is to not do this, not bring this wicked individual into the world? So the question is, how is it possible that not only was he wrong, but he's told that if he continues in this path, he'll have no chelik in Olam Haba, nothing in the world to come. And I'd like to see this evening if we could address this issue and get a better understanding in terms of what this Gemara is telling us. But to do that, I'd like to do something that we don't do often enough. And it's rather ironic because the Chovos HaLevavos pointed out almost 700 years ago that it's a rather interesting religion that we're involved in. It's a religion of actions, it's a religion of mitzvahs, but oftentimes God seems to be absent from our religion. And if not fully absent, certainly serious discussions about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, understanding Hashem, seems to be something that we spend very little time discussing, very little time trying to understand. And I think every once in a while it's important for us to come to the best understanding that we mortals can in terms of getting a grip and understanding on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But before we begin this discussion, I want to reintroduce an introduction that I said earlier, because I think this introduction is pivotal in any serious discussion about God. And that is, we have to understand our relationship to understanding Hashem. And I'll give you a mashal to what I mean. Imagine that Hashem created a two-dimensional world. Imagine Hashem made an entire world just with height and with one huge, giant sheet of paper. That's the whole world. And in this world, Hashem created stick people. They exist with height, with width, but no depth. And imagine we have two of these stick people one day having a conversation. We'll call one Stretch and his buddy Slim. So Stretch and Slim are having a conversation on their sheet of paper. And Stretch turns to Slim and goes, "Wow, wouldn't it be great to be fat? You know, have some real depth to us. Wouldn't that be amazing?" At which point Slim says, "Stretch, I told you, there's no such thing as depth. Stop that nonsense." You see, for Stretch and Slim, who live in a height and with world, to imagine depth is a very difficult exercise. Their entire reality, everything that they've experienced, their entire frame of reference denies the existence of depth. Hence, it's a very difficult concept for them to relate to. So too, we human beings, when we want to contemplate Hashem, have a very difficult task. Hashem is limitless, boundless, knows all, is all-powerful, and by definition, we human beings can't fully relate to that. You see, I'm very, very limited. I exist in this very small space. I can barely concentrate on one thought at one time. For me to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who fills the entire earth but isn't contained by any part of it. For me to relate to Hashem, who occupies every particle of physicality, who is boundless and limitless, means I have to break away from my frame of reference. I have to break away from my reality. I have to go to a dimension that's well beyond anything that I've ever related to. Hence, it's difficult. But I believe the exercise of doing it is very important. And as much as we understand, we'll understand. So to begin this exercise, I'd like to ask the following question. And I do not mean this question facetiously. I mean this quite seriously. Here's the question. The question is, how old is Hashem? How old is Hashem? Now, it's a reasonable question, right? One man may be 20 years old, another man may be 80 years old. How old is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Now, Hevi Omer, Hashem is at least 5,769 years old, because that's how old the earth is. But you see, here's the problem. Hashem was around before the earth was around. So how old is Hashem? I'd like to share with you what the Rambam says on this question. Says the Rambam as follows. Einu motzui bezman, God is not found in time, ad she'elo reishis va'achris, such that he should have a beginning or end. Hashem is not found in time such that he would have a beginning or an end. Now, when you read the words of the Rambam, you're supposed to go, what do you mean Hashem's not found in time? What do you mean found in time? I don't even know what that means. Hashem is not motzui bizman. And I'd like to see if we could spend a few moments trying to understand what the Rambam means when he says Hashem is not motzui bizman. But to do that, I think again we have to sort of break away from our frame of reference. And to do that, I'd like to open up a few interesting questions to you. Here's question number one. Question number one is, before Hashem created Maisa Bereishis, before Hashem created the world, how tall were the giraffes? How tall were they? Now, if you think about that question, what you quickly understand is, before Hashem created physicality, there was no height. You see, height is a measurement of a physical world. If there's no physical dimension, there's no system of measuring it. Hence, before Hashem created physicality, the giraffes were neither tall nor short because there was no system of measuring height. How heavy were the elephants before Hashem created the world? The same answer. Before Hashem created anything physical, there was nothing to weigh. Hence, the system of weight, pounds, ounces, tons, didn't exist. Because those are systems of measurement of the physical world. One more step. How light was it before Hashem created the world? Again, luminosity is a measurement in a physical existence. But if you could close your eyes and imagine absolute void, absence of anything, you quickly recognize there can't be a measurement system of light because there's nothing to measure. Now, with that being said, I'd like to share with you a profound statement that the Sforno says. Bereishis bara Elokim, says the Sforno, berega harishon, at the very first moment of time, Hashem created the heaven and the earth. And when you see that, Sforno, you should also ask a question. What do you mean at the very first moment of time, Hashem created heaven and earth? By definition, Hashem had to have existed before that moment. So how could that have been the first moment of time? How could you tell me at the very first moment of time, Hashem created Shemayim V'aretz, when Hashem wrote the Torah before He created the heaven and the earth, Hashem existed before that? And I'd like to share with you what I believe the answer to that Sforno is. And that answer is that time also only exists in a physical world. You see, everything physical has a beginning, has an end, has a half-life. The measurement system called time only exists in a physical world. In a world of ruchnius, in a world of spirituality, minus the physicality, there's no system to measure time. Time is irrelevant. It doesn't exist. And with that in mind, I think we could better understand the Rambam. Would you like to know what the Rambam means? Hashem is einu motzui bizman. If you can imagine that here's the globe, and Hashem sits way, way above. Hashem is not limited by time. Hashem is boundless, limitless. Hashem exists before, during, and after. Hashem sees everything, beskira achas, what was, what is, and what will be, because Hashem is not limited by time. Hashem is not physical. Hashem is not corporeal. Hashem is not caught up in the physicality of the world. Therefore, Hashem is not limited by time. He can see what was, what is, and what will be. Now, if you get this or not, here's a very important observation. If you want to really understand this, what you have to do is you have to go for a long walk where it's quiet and think. Think long and hard that systems of measuring height exist in a physical world. System of measuring weight exists in a physical world. System of measuring time exists in a physical world. And if you think about this long enough and hard enough, I believe you'll understand exactly what the Rambam means when he says that Hashem is not motzi bezman, Hashem is not limited by time, Hashem is not found in time, Hashem is completely, absolutely beyond time. And when you get it, I almost guarantee about 5 minutes later you're going to go, what? Because you see, my friends, here's the point. We're kind of like Stretch and Slim trying to imagine a third dimension, trying to imagine a world without physicality, trying to imagine a world where time isn't scholate, time doesn't rule, time has no control. But everything in my entire existence denies that. Everything I've ever experienced is concrete and physical. For me to step out of my frame of reference, for me to step beyond everything I've experienced, requires a stretch. But again, I believe if you work at this, you can understand it, and you can come to a different understanding. Now, the reason why this is very, very critical is because I want to share with you an obvious point that is often misunderstood. Hashem is not smarter than we are. Hashem is not like a lot smarter than we are. Hashem is not like a ton smarter than us. It is a totally, completely different order of magnitude. It is incomprehensible to us mortal human beings to understand the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when you come to that one core cognition, you solve numerous, numerous philosophical problems. I believe that 85% of our philosophical problems come from a disease that I call playing God. Playing God means like this. I know what life is about. And I know what I need. As a matter of fact, I know exactly what I need. I need to marry this woman. I need to get this job. I need my kids to get into this school. And I've tried my best to educate Hashem, but for some reason Hashem just doesn't get it. I mean, I've tried to teach him. I daven and I tried to explain to him why it's for my best. And I don't know, Hashem just doesn't get it. And I can't for the life of me figure out why I can't get Hashem to understand what's so obvious and clear. And if that sounds humorous, just listen to most people's philosophical dilemmas, their crises of faith, their real big deal issues that they deal with. And invariably what you find is it boils down to the fact that I know this is what I need, and for some reason Hashem won't give it to me. And I don't know. I'd like to share with you a vastly different perspective. Rav Yochanan Wasserman was a Rosh Yeshiva in Baranovich in Europe before World War II. He came over to the United States of America in 1939 to collect money for his yeshiva. And as he was getting ready to leave, people came over to him and said, Rosh Yeshiva, how could you go back there? Hitler's on the march. They're going to kill the Jews. How could you do it? He said to those people, then my Talmidim are there. I cannot leave them. They can't go without a shepherd. And apparently he was well aware of what was awaiting him. One of the first Jewish liberators of the camps was Lieutenant Mayor Birnbaum. Lieutenant Mayor Birnbaum, when he went into Birkenau, was approached by a gaunt, barely surviving individual. And this person had heard that this Lieutenant Mayor Birnbaum was a chaplain, and this survivor said to him, have you heard of Rabbi Yochanan Wasserman? At which point Lieutenant Birnbaum said, of course I did. I must tell you this following story. I was in Kovna, and they were asking Rav Yochanan, why is Hashem allowing this to happen? What's going on? How could it be? Why would God allow this to be? And Rav Yochanan got up and said the following. He said, my friends, we are making one fundamental error. And I'd like to give you a mashal to explain to you the error. Rav Yochanan said, imagine that there was a city dweller. The city dweller had never been to a farm, but he decided he wanted to learn about agriculture. So he goes to a farmer and he says, teach me your ways. The farmer, being a rather simple fellow, said, listen, there's not much for me to teach you. You want to learn? Come and watch. So the first day, the city dweller watches when the farmer goes out to a beautiful field, grass growing tall, and he takes a metal implement and begins cutting down the grass, literally destroying the field. And the city dweller looks at the farmer aghast. What are you doing? Why are you ruining the field? Then amazingly, the farmer takes the very remains and digs it under. He reaches into a pouch and takes good seed and throws it right into the ground. Then the city dweller watches in further amazement as the farmer takes animal excrement and smears it over the good seed. What are you doing? Screams the city man. What are you doing? You're ruining the good seed. You ruined the field. Now you're ruining the seed. What are you doing? Patience. Patience, my friend, says the farmer. Each day the farmer comes out. Each day the city dweller follows him. And after a few weeks, they start witnessing the seedlings. The little green seedlings start sprouting forth. And the city dweller says to the farmer, I see the wisdom of your ways. I see you're so wise. Each day they come out, the seedlings grow taller and taller. Till the end of the season, there's strong wheat. And the city dweller sits back in amazement and says, your wisdom is manifest, is apparent. It's astonishing. And then he watches as the farmer takes that same implement and begins cutting down, hacking down the wheat that he so painstakingly grew. And the city dweller starts screaming out, what are you doing? You're ruining the field. Patience, my friend, patience. Then he watches as the farmer takes the wheat and literally crushes it. You're ruining it. Then he takes the crushed wheat and pours in water, makes a white paste, and then even worse, mixes it in a bowl. And the city dweller sits there watching as the farmer takes it and puts it into the fire. And the city dweller screams out, idiot, what are you doing? First you cut down the field and you waste the seeds and you pour animal excrement over it. Then finally something grows, you cut that down, you smash it, and then you put it into the fire. What are you doing? Patience, my friend, says the farmer, patience. And then the farmer pulls out of the oven a beautiful, delicious bread, cuts it, offers a slice to the city dweller, and says, now you understand. Said Rav Elchanan to the Jews in Europe then, we're a bit like that city dweller. We come into a world that's long been established, that has a very real purpose, that has many cycles to it. We come in the middle of a cycle and we think we have all the wisdom of the ages. We think we understand everything. We're like that city dweller. And Hashem waits patiently for the time when everything will be revealed. There'll be a time, maybe not now, but there'll come a time when we'll understand very, very clearly. But my friends, that wisdom, a very, very broad vision of life, and understanding that there are cycles to life, and understanding that there are ups and downs and various things that have to be gone through, is a very deep and fundamental concept that most people never get. And I believe that that's the answer to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. You see, what Yeshaya was delivering was a message from Hashem. There is a Torah that's given to the human race. And there is a master to the universe. What's apparent to your eyes is irrelevant. With all of your wisdom, with all of your understanding, you look at it as a bad to bring forth. Trust God. Don't play God. Trust God. Hashem wrote a Torah. Hashem is the creator, the orchestrator of everything in this world. And Hashem said, this is what you're supposed to do. Your job is to do it. When you begin playing God, when you begin understanding better than Hashem what the purpose of existence is, what the purpose of each generation is, then you run yourself into a very, very dangerous situation. You will die and you will have no Olam Haba because you're playing God in a very, very dangerous way. And my friends, these concepts are not easy. They're not easy to understand, and they're not easy to really grasp. But this is a reality that a Jew has to come to. At the risk of repeating something that I've said before, but bears repeating. Alan Dershowitz wrote a book called The Vanishing American Jew. And in that book, he mentions the fact that he was teaching a course in Harvard Law School on comparative religions. The purpose of the course was to survey the various religions of history and rate them, which are good, which are bad, which are indifferent. And he writes, at a certain point during the course, someone made the observation, the purpose of religion is to serve God, to relate to God. If we're rating the different religions, how they did their job, wouldn't it behoove us to rate God? So in fact, that's what they did. They decided to rate God. How did he do it, this thing called creation? Now let me give you a little background before I tell you the rating that God gets. I guess you sit back and look at the world and you see a lot of wonderful things. You see love, you see harmony, you see sunsets, you see flowers. There's a lot of beauty in the world. On the other hand, there's a lot of pain, there's torture, there are orphans, there's divorce, there's a lot of bloodshed. So the conclusion is that if you'd like to know how God did it, creating this world, the answer is God rates a B minus. Not bad. Not an F, certainly not an A plus. Right in the middle, a B minus. Now, I'd like to share with you why that is very, very fallacious thinking. You see, if you rate God as to how he did it, creating the world, you had better have a very solid, fundamental understanding as to why Hashem created the world. And if you attempt to rate God before understanding very clearly what Hashem created the world for, what you're doing is engaging in false thinking. And I'd like to share with you a mashal that I think well encapsulates, well describes exactly the answer to this dilemma. If you'd imagine that there's a beautiful, exclusive health club. You've never gone to this health club before, but you know the lay of the land. On the right is the gym. In the gym is the various exercise equipment. You have the elliptical machines, you have the weights, etc. On the left is a spa. The spa has the steam room, the sauna, the massage tables. You decide first day in health club, you're going right to the spa, you're going to chill, but by mistake you turn right and you end up in the gym. And you look around, you go, what kind of lousy spa is this? Who made this place? What's all these red-faced guys sweating and grunting? And all these machines, whoever made this spa blew it. Says Mr. Hashem, that is a very apt mashal to life. Hashem created two worlds. There's this world, which is the gym. There's the world to come, which is the spa. In this world, we have one purpose. And that is to grow, to accomplish all the challenges of life. All the difficult situations are there for one purpose, for the human to grow, so that I become bigger, I become a better person, I become a greater individual. Whatever state of perfection I'm on is where I leave, and for eternity, when I'm in Olam Haba, when I'm in the world to come, that's a spa, whatever level of perfection I enjoy for eternity. But if you don't understand the two-world mashal, if you don't understand that Hashem created this world to grow and the world to come for a person to enjoy that growth, then nothing under the sun makes sense. And I dare say God would not rate a B minus. If you believe that life ends in the grave, then God rates an F. Because all of the pain, all of the torture, all of the sophisticated pain delivery systems that Hashem clearly designed serve no purpose. Quite the opposite, they're mean-spirited. Once you understand that everything in life has a purpose, so that I have the opportunity to grow, so I can change, so I can make myself into what I'll be for eternity, then all of the deep philosophical problems disappear. But until you understand that, nothing under the sun makes sense. And my friend, I believe that this is exactly where most people veer off. Most people come to this very, very great crisis in faith when they sincerely and honestly believe that they understand life. And not only do they understand life, they have major kashas on Hashem. Why did I need this? Hashem, I'm a good guy. I'm trying to do your will. I didn't need this situation. And invariably, it circles around one single problem. They end up playing God. Playing God means I know exactly what I need, when I need it, how I need it, and for some strange reason I just can't get Hashem to get it. And either I decide that Hashem is just mean, or I get angry at Hashem. Hashem, why won't you do it? Hashem, why are you torturing me? It's clear that this is my best. And if you'd like to grow, the very first step you have to do is take a very, very long step back. You have to take a long step back and ask yourself, how many generations have you lived for? How many hundreds of years have you kicked around this planet? How much do you really understand about existence? And when you come to a very clear understanding, what you quickly understand is that we mortals get it for but a breath, one short breath called our life, and then we're gone. But Hashem has a very, very broad vision. And there are cycles to life and reasons why there have to be things, reasons on an individual level, reason on a global level. And that was exactly the mistake that Chizkiyahu HaMelech was making. What he was doing was playing Hashem. What he was doing was acting well outside the role of a mortal. And what a mortal human being must do is wake up in the morning and say, I am a creation. Hashem is my creator and I trust in him. I rely on him, and to do that requires a very healthy dose of humility. There are so many, many examples of this that it's almost foolish for me to give you any of them. But I'll share with you two examples of us mortals playing God. I was a Rebbe in Rochester for many years, and there was a fellow, this was in the 80s, who was a computer programmer. That was a up-and-coming field at the time. He was very well-established, interviewed well, and no one could figure out why he lost his job. But not only did he lose his job, he couldn't get another job. Interview after interview, company after company, in a growing field, a very intelligent fellow, couldn't get another job. For 5 years, he couldn't land a job. It got so bad that he and his family had to leave and ended up in New York. And it wasn't until a number of years after the story that it became clear the other side of the story. You see, Rochester Yeshiva is a very fine yeshiva for a particular kind of boy. This man had 3 sons. They didn't belong in Rochester. He moved just about when they were heading into yeshiva, and he put them in a different kind of yeshiva, and they flourished, they became solid citizens. Had he stayed there, his children never would have become who they were. But here's the point. Imagine he's standing there during the many years of being unemployed, and he has tainas against Hashem. Hashem, I'm not asking for luxuries. I'm not asking for riches. Bread to put on tables, schar limud, tuition for my kids. Hashem, what's wrong? What's the deal? And there are many, many questions that a Jew can ask on Hashem when it's obvious that Hashem is planning for his detriment, when Hashem is out to get him. I was standing on my deck on 9/11. My next door neighbor was standing in the grass, and he looks up to me and he says, "You know, I was supposed to be on the 102nd floor today, don't you?" I said, "No, I didn't know that." He said, "Yep. My client is on the 102nd floor. I called him yesterday and I said, we must meet today." He said, "I can't do it." I said, "We must." He never turned me down before, and it was very important. And he just wouldn't make time for me. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't believe it. But I'm here today because of that. And how many times do we see we have such a clarity of vision, such a clear understanding of exactly what I need, and it turns out to be the exact opposite? But my friends, I want to share with you a very powerful thought. It's not just about the life-changing things that we play God on. It's the minor things as well. The next time you're rushing to that appointment and you get stopped at a red light and you're, "Oh, Hashem, why?" Stop. Stop and ask yourself, "Wait a minute. It's clear that I'm being directed here. There's a clear Yad Hashem. Maybe I don't have the full picture. My job is to do my shtadlis. My job is to ask myself, what's the wisest course? What is it that I'm supposed to pursue? And I'm supposed to go out there and do it. But if I see that I'm being thwarted, if I see that it's clearly min hashamayim, that I'm being directed the other way, it's time to stop and say, oh, I get it. I get it. There's a bigger picture. Maybe I don't know all of the answers." And again, I believe that 85% of our emunah issues circle around this one problem: we play God. I know exactly what I need, and for some reason Hashem won't play along. And that's when it's time to stop and say, how much do I really know? I'm like Stretch and Slim in a two-dimensional world. I can see but an inch in front of my nose and no further, and I have to rely on Hashem to have a much broader vision. And I believe that if a person wants to grow in Bitachon, there are 3 fundamental yesods that you have to really, really get a hold of. The first 2 are rather easy. It's a third that's the most difficult to grasp. The first concept that a person has to have if they really want to learn to trust in Hashem is to understand that you can't harm me and you can't help me. My fate is 100% controlled by Hashem. What that means is, as I walk down the street, there's that lucite bubble that protects me. It's impenetrable. If on the previous Rosh Hashanah it was decreed that I will live, there is nothing that can change that decree. If on the other hand, on the previous Rosh Hashanah it was decreed otherwise, there is nothing that can save me. I am completely, totally directed by Hashem. And every time you feel that sense of fear Every time a car stops, someone jumps out and you get nervous, it's time to stop and ask yourself the one key question: who created the world? Who runs the world? And do I really believe those words that I mouth on Rosh Hashanah? Mi yichyeh, mi yamos, that Hashem decrees who lives and who dies. And life itself is this grand laboratory of growth if you understand it. The first yesod in Bitachon is understanding that you can't harm me, you can't help me, my fate is completely beyond Hashem. And that's not that difficult to work on. The second concept also isn't that hard. The second concept is understanding that Hashem loves me more than I love me. That Hashem is more concerned for my good than I'm concerned for my good. And that concept also is not that hard. If you're not quite sure about it, all you got to do is look at your children. Look at your children when once again they do the same stupid thing and you want to tear your hair out and you want to scream but you can't say anything because you know that they have to learn their lesson. And you have to let them scrape their shins, fall down, because that's the only way they'll learn. And know fully well that's exactly how Hashem sits there and waits. Yingle, when are you going to get it? When are you going to wake up? You're going to do the same stupidity again and again. And you're going to stand there in Yom Kippur and clap, achi, get it, wake up. It's all for your good. And understanding that Hashem loves me more than I love me, that Hashem is more concerned for my betterment than I am, is the second yesod of Bitachon. But it's a third fundamental yesod of Bitachon that's the hardest to get. And that is that Hashem knows better than I do what's for my good. And if that sounds obvious, it's not obvious at all. Knowing that I have but a very, very short vision of what I need. How many people know where they will be 20 years from now? How many chassanim standing under the chuppah can say, I know exactly what I'm going to be like when I'm 50, so I know that this is the one I need? How many people have the wisdom to be able to call the shot 20 years, 30 years into the future? And when you come to this core cognition, that Hashem is not like a little bit smarter than us, not like a lot smarter, but Hashem is totally, completely in a different order of magnitude of understanding, then you could do that most difficult thing we humans do, and that is learn to trust in Hashem. Trusting in Hashem means relying on Hashem, knowing that Hashem knows better than I, taking my heavy load and saying, Hashem, I trust in your wisdom and I rely on you. And there's a tremendous lesson to learn from Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who was a very great individual. He was a man who was zochet to Ruach HaKodesh, but he made one mistake. And that mistake was that he saw something coming out, but he didn't see the full picture. He saw the fact that he was to have a child like Menashe, but he didn't fully understand that that was part of Hashem's cheshbon, and he began playing God, and Yeshaya said to him, if you continue, you will lose your life, you will lose your Olam Haba. To really understand this, we have to understand every once in a while how much greater than us HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Hashem is limitless, boundless. Hashem is Einu Motzui Bizman, means Hashem is not limited by any formation of physicality. Not by space, not by location, not by time. Hashem sees that which is deep, deep into the future as much and as quickly and at the same moment as He sees that which happened thousands of years before. Hashem knows everything. Hashem knows my inner thoughts as I'm thinking them. And when a human being comes to that cognition that Hashem is vastly, infinitely smarter than us, you could also come to that tremendous recognition that I don't know everything. And I really don't know what's in my best. And when I get thwarted, when I get stopped, when it's clear that Hashem is directing me in a different way, that's when I'm supposed to say, I get it. I'm stopping to play God. I'll play creation. You play creator. And we're going to reverse roles. And when you do that, all of the philosophical issues, all of the big emunah problems fade away. When you understand that there are two worlds, when you understand that there are many questions that I'm going to have that I will not know the answers to in this world. And the reason is because many things that we're exposed to are not good for us in this world. Everything we're exposed to is for our good. Many things in this world, many things in the world to come, but understanding that means understanding there are two worlds. for Rav Elchanan to sit there under the very threat of the Nazis and say, we are like the city slicker. We're like that very, very limited city slicker who looks at the farmer throwing the seeds in the ground. We don't get it. We don't understand. Taking a step back and understanding that Hashem does is key and fundamental to being a mamin. I'd like to close with one last observation. And that is as follows. What would have happened had Chizkiyahu not done tshuva? Now, we all know what happened. He said to Yeshaya, you have a daughter, I'll take her, be my wife, and therefore the course of history was changed. But what would have happened had Chizkiyahu said, no, I'm going to my grave this way? Obviously, he would have died, and obviously his portion of the world to come would have been dramatically diminished. But I'd like to share with you something that's a little bit deeper than that. When Chizkiyahu did tshuva, and on the third day he got well and got up from his bed, a very interesting event happened. Sancheriv had surrounded Yisrael. Sancheriv had brought an army of 185,000 Roshei Legionera, 185,000 captains. That means to say he brought an army of such mass and such size that he easily would have destroyed the entire Jewish army. He would have romped, taken over Eretz Yisrael. The third day when Chizkiyahu did tshuva, got up and walked around, a malach came and killed, smote in one fell motion, killed every one of those 185,000 captains. Sancheriv's armies were in disarray. They ran from the field. They were destroyed. I'm not a Novi, and I don't know. But I want to imagine together with you what would have happened had Chizkiyahu not done tshuva. He would have died on a deathbed, and he would no longer have been king. And you'd like to know what might very well have happened? Sancheriv would not have been destroyed. The Malach might very well not have killed those armies. Sancheriv would have attacked Eretz Yisrael and put a pagan king on top of Israel. If you think Menashe was bad, would you like to know how bad a pagan king whose entire focus is to eradicate anything Jewish, any Jewish nationality would have been? Far worse than Menashe. And here's the point. There is a cycle to life. For whatever the reason, Hashem knew there were 55 years when the Klal Yisrael was supposed to be taken dramatically down. If we were able to sit back and view history from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vantage point, we'd understand the ups, the downs, the cycles. But we don't. But there is a cause, there's a reason, and there's a very clear theme that runs throughout history. And if Chizkiyahu decided not to play, if he decided, I don't want to be a part of this game, the same events would have happened. Hashem would have brought the same result. All that would have happened would have been he would have suffered. He would not have reached his Olam Haba, but the same results would have been. And understanding that Hashem has a master plan and his great wisdom to it, and there's very little that we mortals can do to change it, is a fundamental concept in understanding what it's like to be a human. May Hashem grant us the wisdom, understanding, ability to put this to practice.